Hello, this is Jonathan Mays, editor-in-chief of Restaurant Business, and in this week's episode of A Deeper Dive, I speak with Tom Sacco, the CEO of the 52-unit Iowa-based pizza chain. Happy Joe's is a nearly 50-year-old brand that was sold before the pandemic. Tom was brought in as CEO after a career with BJ's, Ponderosa, Red Robin, and Ghirardelli, among others. The pandemic forced the brand to rethink how it does business. And so Tom talks about how Happy Joe's modernized its operations and other things coming out of that period. For instance, it did not count transactions. We discussed the 2022 bankruptcy involving the chain's corporate units and what led to that bankruptcy and how it got out of it. And we talk about the brand's surprising recent growth. We also discuss the chain's penchant for small towns, as well as taco pizzas and pickle pizzas, and how Happy Joe's was a pioneer in both. We're talking pizza on A Deeper Dive, so please check it out. All right, I'm here with Tom Sacco. Tom, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
All right, super. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about Happy Joe's?
All right. Well, Happy Joe's is a Midwestern-based company that started in 1972 selling pizzas, but with a different spin on it. We weren't looking to be the best red sauce pizza. We were looking to be the most unique flavored based pizzas. So our claim to fame is we were the originator of the taco pizza, you know, and we have all different kinds of unique pizzas. We have the basics, you know, like a pepperoni or a pepperoni and sausage, but we really get, you know, into our sweet spot when we're talking about, you know, a sauerkraut and Canadian bacon pizza or a sloppy Joe pizza. Okay. Or Christmas, Thanksgiving, we do a turkey and gravy and dressing and mashed potato pizza. So we look at pizza like an artist looks at a blank canvas. And so we look at what's the most convenient comfort food, you know, that we're going to put on it for this year. And that's how we go about it. But you can get your basic, you know, pepperoni pizza, and it's as good as anywhere else you're going to get. But we do a lot of other pizzas that we are very famous for and get a lot of recognition for.
Tell me the story of the taco pizza.
Well, yeah. I mean, the taco pizza back in I think it was 1973, you know, Joe saw this, Joe Witte, the founder of the company, was a baker by profession. So he was all about the dough, but his background, he'd worked with Shakey's Pizza, and he was in Albuquerque and tried to get them to change their dough because he didn't think the quality of the dough was very good. It led to a large disagreement between him and the company. He ended up leaving and starting his own pizza company. But with his time, because he's from North Dakota, so with his time down in New Mexico, he was exposed to some of the Tex-Mex and taco specifically flavor profiles and came back and figured out instead of using red sauce, you know, we use refried beans as the base on our pizza. And we literally build, you know, a taco salad, for lack of a better description, on a pie shell. And we top it after it comes out of the oven with the lettuce up to that point and the taco chips. Everything else gets baked. But when it comes out, then we put the fresh lettuce and the taco chips on it. And that's really been, you know, that was the one that kind of put us on the map. You know, and now we do all kinds of, you know, fun pizzas like that. You know, we got a, you know, macaroni and cheese pizza. We do all kind. I mean, we had a bacon. There was a little challenge that happened last year. Pizza Hut rolled out a pizza, and they claimed it was the first time pickles had ever been used on a pizza. So I scrolled back through a Rolodex of recipes, and I sent the press a copy of our, what we call our Supermax. It's our bacon cheeseburger pizza that comes with pickles, and we rolled it out nationally in 1978. So it created a little bit of a hubbub, kind of like the Taco John, Taco Bell thing that happened, you know, with their Taco Tuesday with between us and Pizza Hut. But it was good for the press. It was good for everybody. And we finally got acknowledged that, yeah, we were the first ones to put pickles on a pizza, you know. So it's fun when you look at it from the standpoint that as long as a guest is the winner, then it's a great thing to be able to look at doing.
So you had pickles on a pizza in the 1970s.
1978, to be exact. Yes, sir.
Right, right. By the way, yeah, you called it a, what, bacon cheeseburger pizza, but if you have pickles on it, it's a pickle pizza, just for the record.
Okay, it's a pickle
pizza. That is 100% true. It's a pickle pizza because that's what you taste, is the pickle.
Right, that is exactly right.
Right. Now, do you have, pickle pizzas more recently?
Well, so based on your comment, yes, when we rolled out our Sloppy Joe pizza in 2022, it had the pickles and our spread of mustard on it. But what did you taste? You tasted the pickles.
You always taste the pickles.
So, yeah, a recent one was 2022 when we rolled out the Sloppy Joe pizza.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the thing. Like, if you're going to put pickles on a pizza, I would probably just call it a pickle pizza. There is a weird, I don't understand it. I like pickles on all sorts of things, but when I eat a pizza, I don't want to have a pickle, but that's me.
Right.
There's a large contingent of Americans that really like pickles on their pizza. It's always interesting to me to see it. You know, I live in Minnesota. You go to the Minnesota State Fair, and then the pickle pizza line is ridiculous. It's completely ridiculous. Anyway, that's a tangent. So how many locations you folks at right now?
52.
Oh, 52. And yeah. How was last year for you?
It was good. I mean, we weren't up as much as we had been the last couple of years, but we ended up about 3.4% for the year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What did you attribute that to?
Mostly price.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Mostly taking price. One of the things we did last year that the company had never done is we started tracking transactions.
Mm-hmm.
And so we noticed that even when we were comping up in sales, we were actually comping down in guest count and in transactions. So we put a big push on rolling out lower priced products. And we saw our check average come down about a dollar, our transaction average come down about a dollar, you know, per transaction. But our transaction counts are now positive.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that by rolling out a different line of pizzas. We call them our thin crust pizzas. And they run from $12.99 to $17.99. Same toppings. Everything's exactly the same. It's just, and the quality is the same. The big difference is the dough. You know, we're using about a third of the cost of the dough, and we're taking a little bit more of a hit on margin than we do on the standard pizzas. And then we also came out with even a lower priced product line. And this is different. So some people think this is really, you know, goofy for us to be doing, but we rolled out a line of burger pizzas. And so we used the burger patty as like the platform for what you would build a pizza on. So we do a taco pizza burger. We do a Happy Joe Specials, our Canadian bacon sauerkraut pizza. It's a very, very popular pizza for us. So we do our Happy Joe Special pizza burger. You know, so we do all these other signature product lines of pizzas that we do on the burger, and we can sell those from $8.99 to $12.99. And that helps us compete mostly at lunchtime, but with, you know, the burger places. You know, instead of sitting in the line and paying $10.45, you know, for a value meal or a quarter pounder meal at McDonald's, or, you know, spending at least that much at Red Robin. Now, if you really have that craving for a Happy Joe's taco flavored pizza or whatever the other favorites are that you have, you can get it now on a burger. And so it really caters to that, you know, single mobile person at lunch that's looking to get something that's less expensive, because our pizzas, even our small pizzas, you know, are you know, mid double digits, you know, $12, $14, $15, depending on which one you're getting, where you can get the same flavor profile on a burger for $8 to $10.
Mm-hmm. So the company hadn't been recording traffic or transaction count. Really?
Correct.
And that was for its entire history. Why hadn't it done?
Yeah, that was for the first 47 years until I got here. That's correct.
Really? Why hadn't the company done that? That seems kind of basic.
Remember, you know, Joe Witte ran it for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he wasn't really focused on that. I mean, he was just focused on, are people happy with the pizzas they're getting? He was real production focused. Okay. And as long as the kids were smiling, the parents were smiling, that's what mattered to him, you know, and the restaurants are busy, you know, but with what happened with COVID, it kind of made you look at your business a little bit differently. And then when the cost of products went up, we went like 2.5 years before we took a price increase. But when we took a price increase, we needed to, because our costs were now in the low 30s and we'd always been running in the low 20s, you know. And so we saw the comp numbers not be double digit anymore. We saw the comp numbers come down. But we noticed that Friday and Saturday nights, sales were good, but the restaurants weren't as busy as they used to be. Mm-hmm. That's what caused us to start looking at, you know, the transaction or the guest counts.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, it's and I've had more than one company on here on this podcast that, you know, has taken over a legacy concept that was owned by a family for a long time. And then there are just a lot of things that you have to do.
Yeah.
To just sort of bring the company into sort of a more modern age.
And when I was at BJ's or Red Robin or a lot of the other big national brands, that stuff was standard, mm-hmm. right? But when you get with some of these, like you say, some of these family-based, you know, companies where they have a certain legacy and a certain pattern of doing things. And, I mean, you know, the people in the accounting department, most of them have been here 30-plus years. So they've only known one way. A lot of the people have never worked for another company except Happy Joe's. You know, so it wasn't like they had somebody coming in with fresh ideas asking the question, why? And when Joe got ill, it transitioned to his family and they grew up in the business. So it just continued, you know, the company's making money, the stores are growing, we're selling franchises. You then why, if it ain't broke, why fix it kind of a thing? Well, COVID put a whole different perspective on all that.
Mm-hmm. So COVID had to force the company to start thinking, hey, wait a minute, we probably need to do things quite a bit different.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and you know, I came in right at the beginning of COVID, and in addition to that, was how are we going to sell the brand, right? To grow it, it's a franchise model, and we hadn't remodeled the restaurants. You know, probably in 25 years, our website was so old, you know, there was stuff we couldn't do animation. We couldn't do video on our website because it was just really an older product. Mm-hmm. All of our competition had, you know, apps. We didn't have an app, you know. So I took the first couple of years and just kind of rebuilt from the ground up who Happy Joe, you know, we brought in people. We did a lot of, you know, soul searching on what we wanted to be. And what was important to us from our history, but where did we need to go? And that led us to do some of the things that we did, you know, and they've been successful. I mean, the feedback has been fabulous. Where we haven't got a brand new ground up prototype yet. We've got the first one's under construction. It's going to be open in Florida, you know, in a couple of months. Everything else has been taking over a space and remodeling it to look, you know, like the new restaurant. But over the one shoulder, I guess my right shoulder, you can see that poster. Part of the magic that we tried to do is there was a book written about Joe Witte called Not Your Average Joe. And so Harrison, this design firm out of Dallas that we used to redo all the restaurant elements, they created 40 different custom pieces of art for the restaurant. And the book had the reason I bring the book up is there's 13 different chapters, and they took every chapter and they created two or three pieces of art from that chapter. So, you know, this was off the cover. It's Not Your Average Joe, but there's a chapter that talks about Joe's fondness for special needs children. And so we have a couple of posters, one poster that's a sign language only about that says, I love pizza on it. But you wouldn't know what it says if you're not into sign language. Hmm. So we try to do things that keep our foot in our past from a historical standpoint, but move the look and the feel of the brand forward so that today's consumer, you know, mom today that brings her child in for a birthday party has different expectations than mom did in 1975. You know, that's the only way I can describe it. So today's Happy Joes are going to help that mom that wants to come in and have her friends with their kids there. And they're going to have a glass of Chardonnay or a rosé and have their pizza. And the kids are going to run around and play on the games and follow the train and all the different things that we have that are very child-centric, which are completely different than what we had back in the 70s and the 80s, you know, because the world was different back then.
Yeah. Now, the parent company in 22 ended up declaring bankruptcy. How did that affect the brand? What was the story?
Let me correct you on that. The parent company didn't declare bankruptcy. We've got five different corporations that we operate. The two corporations that filed bankruptcy out of the five were the two that operated corporate stores.
Got it.
Okay, the franchising components and the consolidated DRH holdings didn't file bankruptcy. We filed bankruptcy because when the company got sold, part of the what happened before the company got sold, when Joe passed, the family sold all the real estate. And, you know, I don't want to throw anyone under the bus, but some of the real estate deals that were made were for the financial benefit of the family and not for the financial benefit of the restaurants.
Got it.
And when I got here and we were in COVID and all this stuff was going on and I was having conversations with landlords about rent breaks and stuff like that, some of them just said, no, that, you know, we just got this thing a couple of years ago. We're not going to give any break. We don't care about what's going on with COVID. So no problem. You know, I said to them, listen, I go in and transform companies. If you look at my history, I've taken multiple companies in and out of bankruptcy. I'm giving you a heads up. Okay. And it's like, well, you do what you got to do. Well, and we did. And we shook loose that some of the dead weight we had, okay, with those real estate rental properties that were properties we originally owned and we sold them to a third party. Mm-hmm. And then came back out. I mean, we were packaged going in. We knew we were coming out in a minute. As a matter of fact, there's a new called a sub chapter 5 in the chapter 11 that you have to be in and out in 90 days. Okay. And we were in and out in 90 days because it was really based on real estate alone. Mm-hmm. Okay. And never had a problem. We pay all of our bills with no problem. And if you talk to our vendors, I mean, we pay usually the day after we get groceries delivered. Okay. Cause we take advantage of a 1% discount for quick pays. And there's no problem with Happy Joe's making money. The problem was the way the company had been left to the new group that had bought it, you know, and that's kind of what I get paid to do is to come in and fix stuff.
Right.
So,
it was a lease bankruptcy.
It was based on rental. Based on leased properties. Exactly.
Yeah. I always classify restaurant bankruptcies in a couple of different ones. There's, well, three, I guess. There's, you know, there's the debt bankruptcy because they took on too much debt. There is the, you know, operations, just general operations bankruptcies because they're literally losing money. And then you got bankruptcies that are done because you have onerous leases and they need to be disposed of. So this was a lease bankruptcy related to the sale leaseback.
Yeah. And three out of the five properties that were turned back in, I helped the landlord find franchisees for them. Mm-hmm. So they never, ever really closed. They just changed. We bankrupted them so that we could sell them, so we could turn them back in. And then the landlord could redo a new lease with these other people. And these people brought the rates actually down. Yeah. You know, one of the landlords is now a partner in one of those Happy Joes. I mean, so did it turn out as good as we were hoping? No, we hoped all five properties that we turned back would get redone, but we got three of them done. I mean, I didn't come into it, and I told the landlord, I don't want to close any stores, okay? But this is a corporate store problem. This does not affect the franchise community, and so we sold them to franchisees because once they knew they could get a decent, they weren't going to pay the rent we were paying either. But once they realized the landlords would work with them, and they had no choice. It was either that or else take these. Like I told them, you know, one of the biggest landlords in New York, I said, have you been out here to see your properties? No. I said, well, they're in the middle of a cornfield. Okay, this is an urban New York or New Jersey. Like, you've got a lot of your properties. Out here, we're in little itty-bitty towns surrounded by cornfields. So you can work with me, or you can come back and find them, you know, in amongst the cornfields.
Yeah.
And they worked with us, and we've got a good relationship with them.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right. So now you've been expanding quite a bit. Am I wrong?
We've been trying to, correct. Yeah, mm-hmm. we've been trying. We've had a lot of success. Success has come faster than I thought it would come initially.
Really?
Yeah.
You just signed a 6-unit deal, I think, in the Twin Cities, I'm at.
I just got off the phone with another fella that's on the other side of the Twin Cities, mm-hmm. that's looking at doing a 6-unit deal.
Mm-hmm.
So there might be 12 units under contract, you know, in less than a month up there.
Wow. Right.
Although he's also talking about Duluth, and he's talking about St. Cloud, which I've had restaurants in the past, back in my Bonanza days. You know, so I know a lot about a lot of these little markets, Mankato and all these other different markets, you know, that we've had restaurants in over the years. So, you know, I'm pretty, you know, when you've been doing it as long as I've been doing it, you know, and you've worked with brands that have been all around the country, you get a good feel for some of these communities that we think Happy Joe's would be really, really good in.
So is that still your strategy, is to go into smaller communities?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I love smaller. I always have,
mm-hmm. you know, with some brands like, you know, BJ's, and because of the cost of the building and the dynamicness of the concept, you had to be more of in an urban market. But for who Happy Joe's is and what our focus is, I mean, we're really kind of like Norman Rockwell. I mean, that's kind of what we are. I mean, people come to us for birthdays and, you know, celebrations and graduations and, you know, and we've rolled with generations of families. I mean, this fellow that I was talking to today grew up in New Ulm. If you're from Minnesota, you're going to know where New Ulm is, right? And he jumped at the opportunity to be a franchisee when he knew they were available, because he still drives from Minneapolis to New Ulm to see family, and he picks up pizzas and brings it back with him because there's no Happy Joe's in the community. And when we were talking today on our call, it was all about that the character of the brand is what's the most important to us at Happy Joe's. And to have that kind of character, you have to be a real avid supporter in the community. So you got to be the restaurant that supports the football team, okay, that supports the cheerleaders, that people go to when they have their graduations. You know, they come to you after church on Sundays. They hold baptisms and birthday parties at your place. And a lot of that happens more in some of the smaller towns than it does in the metro markets, where you've got so much more competition for that new sexy restaurant to go to. And the value system is just so different, you know, which allows us to work where we support the booster club at the high school, and the football coach sends us kids to work because the kids need a job, you know, and the coach manages them as much as we manage them to make sure he's coming to work and stuff like that. You know, so that's why I referenced that Norman Rockwell type flavor that we have with the brand.
No. Yeah. I tend to think that small towns, as I said, like an under-tapped resource sometimes for some things, because I think that they really, you know, the communities tend to appreciate it more.
They do. You're spot on, Jonathan. You are spot on. Mm-hmm. And they appreciate, you know, when you do little things, where when we do the little things in the bigger cities, it's just lost in the clutter, because mm-hmm. there's so much other stuff going on. And when I say little things, you know, I'll give you a small example of something. Our PR firm is based in Dallas. They picked up on some stuff on social media that was going on Instagram. A young man was coming home for Christmas, not this past Christmas, the Christmas before. And he was in a dialogue with his mother that he was teasing her that he wasn't going to come home for Christmas if he didn't know what she was going to be serving for food. So every day she started putting up all these different foods. then he came back out and said, but you've missed my favorite. You've not yet talked about a Happy Joe's pizza. So that caught my social media firm's ear. They got me involved. I got engaged with him on social media. I treated the family to Happy Joe's. I sent him home back to New York City with Happy Joe's pizza. They ended up on the Today Show, you know, that week when he was home at Christmas. He had the Happy Joe's boxes. All this crazy stuff took place. It went from just somebody wanting a Happy Joe's pizza to where he had over a million, you know, views on his Instagram account, you know, because of people talking about, why would you care about a pizza place in Iowa? You're coming from New York where the best pizza in the world are, except his best pizza was in Iowa. Okay. And that's what he was looking forward to when he came home. And that's the kind of emotional connection that Happy Joe's guests have with the brand. It's really, really different that way. And that's why I say it rolls generationally, because the grandparents who were the parents taking the children, those children now are parents and they're taking their children. So it just rolls. And in these smaller communities, there's a lot more stability that way, with people passing down their business, you know, their farm or whatever it is, than you see in the mobility in a lot of the big major metro markets.
Tom, this was a great story to end on. I really appreciate you joining me this week on the podcast. Loved it.
Yeah, this was great, John. Thanks for inviting me. And, you know, I really appreciate you taking the time to learn a little bit more about the magic that we create at Happy Joe's.
And that should do it for this week's episode of A Deeper Dive, which was edited, as always, by Spoons, artwork by Nico Hines. You may find this and other episodes of the podcast on our website at www.restaurantbusinessonline.com/article/deeper-dive. And you may subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. I'm Jonathan Mays, your host, podcast producer, and the editor-in-chief of Restaurant Business. Thank you for listening.